about law. Who gets to be God? Who gets to be God's deputies? Who is the Most High? Who is the divine authority? It's all about the claim to the Most High. The only way that somebody can be higher than us is if we give away our power. Because there's nobody. We're all equal. But we're not equal in our knowledge. So ultimately, I think it does have to be a hierarchy, but it has to be a cooperative hierarchy, like a bee colony. It's about what our value system is, what we care about.
Universal Hive Mind. Today is June 18th, 2025. I'm your host, Nate Kapp, and welcome to the 75th Cubbyhole Podcast, where we're continuing to pierce the veil of Babylon, where critical topics are unveiled, discussed, and tested. The website for today's show is cubbyhole.com. That's CubbyHole.com. And if you prefer to listen to the show on a different platform, you can also listen with Spotify, iHeartRadio, Amazon, TuneIn Radio, Pandora, Simplecast, YouTube, Odyssey, X, Minds, BitChute, and much more. And just as I stated on the last few shows, Odyssey is where I'm moving much more of my work under Nate Kapp. So I'm doing this because of censorship and also just trying to get the work out a little further. And I'm also trying to do so on X and BitChute, but I haven't got a chance to upload much on there yet. So if you've been on there and you're looking for this information, I apologize that there's nothing really there yet, but there will be. It's just I'm very far behind with trying to get this information out because I've just had a lot going on, and so I'm just trying to catch up now. So if this is your first time listening to the Cubbyhole, welcome, and I hope that you will find a lot of value here. But I always tell everybody, start at podcast number one, work your way forward, go in the chronological direction, so that way you'll have a bigger picture understanding of what it is that's being said in this whole Cubbyhole podcast, okay? As for all the listeners, all the studiers, your time and attention is greatly appreciated, and I really hope this information is serving you well. So that being said, there are those who are in search for truth, and then there are those who have basically figured it all out. And what I mean by this is that there are those who are not learning any further. Once they get out of high school, or once they've dropped out, or maybe they've never even gone to school, they think that they have it all figured out. They don't go any further. They don't want to know anything else because, I don't know, this authority figure has it all figured out. This scientist has it all figured out. This philosopher has it all figured out. This researcher, this, you know, truth speaker has it all figured out. This pastor at the church has it all figured out. This rabbi has it all figured out. I'm not going to do any of the work because they have it all figured out. Therefore, I have it all figured out, and I don't need to learn any further. And this is what creates a cage for everyone around a person that thinks like this. That's why we're living in such a condition of slavery in this world, is because people are not learning this information, and therefore, I'm stating that we have to make the signal louder. So I'm asking the students to take themselves more serious at getting the information out. And I'm not saying to, you know, put the cart before the horse, but also if you're learning the information, you can learn it a lot further by voicing the information out. Once you learn something and you voice it out, you actually start to learn it even more than what you just previously were conscious of with that information. So, and that's something I'm going to teach in this episode and in the next episode. But we have to understand that the iron fist, the velvet glove is off and the iron fist is out. And we got to get this information out a lot further. We have to push ourselves harder to get this information out. But also, we have to make sure that we understand what it is that we're, researching, or what we're hearing, or what we're, taking notes on. So I'm not saying just go out and regurgitate information. I'm saying that if you understand it, you got to take the extra initiative, the extra steps to push the information out, to make the frequency louder. So I really hope people take the time to download these shows, even maybe turn them into some kind of, physical form, like a book. It doesn't even have to be necessarily this information, but information that sounds like this, information that has a moral message to it. Get it out there, because this information needs to be heard. It needs to be spread out so people have, more of a chance at understanding that there is something so much more that's not being understood, and why this condition of slavery is, firmly in place as a result of the ignorance of this type of information. Okay, so we have to understand also, this is not my knowledge. This is our knowledge that we're hearing in these shows. Okay, this isn't Douglas Martin's knowledge. This isn't Brandon Martin's knowledge. It's our knowledge. It's all humans' knowledge. Anybody who can reason, anybody who can logically make sense of the information, this is their knowledge. Okay. And so we have a right to this knowledge, and also this knowledge needs to get passed on in order for people to get a hold of this knowledge. And because of all the censorship, because of, all the different strategies and methods that they're using in these, on the internet through all these different programs, it's very difficult to get the information out there. But with more hands, there becomes lighter work. And so that means that we really have to, if we really care about our freedom, that we have left, and also just freedom in general, then we need to take this information more serious by learning it, understanding it, and passing it forward, by sharing it, by, expressing it. Okay. So now there are going to be slides for today's show. And so if you go to cubbyhole.com, go to the top where it says episodes 51 plus, go down to show number 75, and there you will find the slides for today's show. And there are quite a few slides, very important slides to follow along with. And it's going to be a pretty big show. So I'm going to deeply go into what I refer to as the sacred trace, something I've been really wanting to talk about for a very long time. I actually talked about it briefly in my Earth Brain Part 2 with the subtitle The Sacred Trace. But I didn't really get deeply into what the trace really deeply means in that presentation, just because of I was limited on the time, and I was really just trying to develop the information in such a small, compact way to get the message out there as clear as possible. But there's so much that I left out of that presentation, but I do intend to talk more about it and explain it more in these podcasts as I move forward. So I'm going to talk about that, and I'm also going to talk about the profane trace as well. Okay, so there's two parts to this trace, and there's a sacred part and there's a profane part. And this is all about tracing out the shadow, but it's not just about the shadow, it's about finding the light at the center of darkness. Okay, so we're going to really, really dive deep into this topic. And also, hopefully, at the end of the show, we're going to talk about religion and the Logos. And we're also going to talk about the occult And this is all dealing with the Necher, the ancient Egyptian Necher Thoth or Thoth. Okay, so we're going to get into Thoth eventually, probably in the next couple of shows. But I'm just letting people know ahead of time that this is very important prerequisites to that information. Really, all these shows are very important prerequisites to what I'm getting to. And so I really hope you're following along and you're taking a lot of notes. And it's going to be a really, really amazing development. It's something I'm really excited to share with everyone. And I've just been looking forward to putting this information out for a long time. So I'm just glad I'm really getting to it now. So now, before I get into the recaps for the other shows, I just wanted to let everyone know that Brandon Martin just put out a new presentation that I really highly recommend checking out. And it is basically a presentation that's complementing a lot of what you're hearing here in the last 20 or so shows in the Cubbyhole. And you know, a lot of what I've been talking about with the Zodiac and the third degree. And his presentation is titled Over the Rainbow, with the subtitle The Secret Doctrine and Occult Origins of the Wizard of Oz. And he did such a great job, and it's just a very well done demonstration of how we can further understand the Zodiac and the ancient Egyptian mythos, being the stellar, the lunar, and the solar. And so I definitely recommend seeing how the Wizard of Oz basically aligns with the Zodiac and the mythos. So definitely check that out. And you can also go to Seed at the top of the Cubbyhole, and there you'll find all his work. Okay. Now, I'm going to do a recap of show number 74 and 72. Okay. So I'm going to go in that order. And I just want people to understand that I'm doing this so that way it catches us up. It keeps the information together and cohesive. And that way you know where I'm working from, okay? Because it's a lot of knowledge. It's a lot of information. And I'm not, I'm hoping that people are not getting too overwhelmed by what it is that I'm laying out or how I'm laying this information out. And I assume that it is overwhelming. So I really appreciate those who are taking the time to really go through this information as thorough as possible. But also, when you're first listening to the information, I think it's important just to pay attention to, mostly pay attention to the idea. You know, mostly pay attention to the bigger picture, the bigger message, because that's where you'll really start to see the bigger picture, to know where you got to go in your own work, to really, understand where you got to go do certain types of research on your own and take, you know, deep notes and, go further into the research, even further than what I'm presenting here, just to really see it for yourself, to really unveil it for yourself, because that's where you're going to really find more growth and find more value. So in show 74, we had Douglas Martin back on the show, and it was a really great show. You know, it's just, it's always so great to get all his wisdom. And, you know, he really laid it down very well in show 73 and 74. And I'm just glad that he's, you know, back on the scene and, you know, putting the information out, because he's got a lot to give. And I'm very thankful that he was able to make the time to come on here and lay this information out. So the recap of 74, we talked about the Mount of Glory being stored in the Little Bear, which is basically the gateway to Amenta. And this is dealing with the North Amenta in the Stellar Doctrine, but it's also dealing with the Amenta of the West in the Solar Doctrine as well. And we got into the Ka, which is dealing with the soul or spirit. This is dealing with the underworld. We talked about eschatology, which is dealing with final things. We got into what Doug brought to the table called euhemerism. And this is about being the interpretation of mythology in a way that assumes real temporal historical events or people that were what the myths originated from. Okay, so this is really important to understand the dogma that we're dealing with, mostly in people who believe in the myths as being based on real events and real people. Okay, real gods even. Okay, and so this is about literalizing and historicizing myths as being real in from their inception, from the beginning. Okay, and so this is a very big deal. This is a very big dilemma that we have, and this originates really from the fact that the solar mythos has become corrupt. It has become literalized. The solar mythos in its deteriorated form is because of literalization. That is why we have lost our way. That's why we're a bunch of kids in this world collectively that have lost our way. We have been cut off. Okay, so I'm going to get into this. And so this term euhemerism is a very important term to pay very close attention to. And we also got into totemism. Totemism is something that we've been talking about quite a bit, but it's about seeing the animal kingdom or, you know, certain objects in nature that reflect spiritual qualities or attributes to the human soul. Okay, so this is all about understanding totemic sociology. And then we got into sign language, and sign language is about using signs or symbols to express or act out symbolically. Okay, so it's about the whole brain being engaged with nature. Okay, it's about, you know, a pure connection in consciousness. Then we got into the origins of magic in religion. So magic begins at the point of the inception of religion, because this is when man tries to begin to influence elemental powers, which ultimately gets deteriorated into what's known as fetishism. And this is where the adoration of the object represents the soul or spirit or ka. Okay, that's the K-A, the Ka, and its symbolic representation begins to deteriorate. And an example of this would be like the sun symbolically represents the soul or the Ka, and the religion or fetishism or magic would be to create a proxy in the place of spirit or the soul as a means of preserving. But over time, the understanding of the spirit would be ultimately forgotten. Okay, it would be completely cut off. So the proxy for the spirit would be venerated instead. So this is fetishism. This is the origins of magic in religion. Okay, but of course, we have to understand this can be a very, you know, good thing, but ultimately this is what gets us in trouble because we have been cut off from this information. That's why we can't, you know, neglect this information any further. So once we have, you know, discovered this information again, we have to preserve it and pass it on for progeny and posterity. So that way we understand that the proxy is not the real thing. The proxy is only there to remind us of the real thing, being spirit or being the soul. Okay? So we really have to, you know, keep that in mind and try not to lose this any further. We got into the pyramids and cycle measurement. We talked about the tracing boards, the 3 degrees, which is infancy, adolescence, and maturity. And we got into Horus, Sut, and Shu, which are the 3 original heroes, the first original trinity. We got into the horseshoe, the symbol of the horseshoe, and how that relates to Nut. And we got into Osiris, which is preserved in the X symbol, which is the 5. And we got into Khensu in the lunar cult, which is also preserving the X in the wings, the X wings. And so this is about the X-winged elemental Netcher bringing the X from the stellar to the solar through the lunar. Okay? So that's really, really powerful. It's very important. And also, we talked about Ptah, which is preserved in the 9. And remember, the 9 is a completion number. And this is something we're going to get into as we go further into the zodiac, especially when we're getting up closer to Gemini. And also, we got into Amun-Ra. We got into the Aten. And this is a very big deal, being the powers of 10, which are the greater mysteries, which becomes fully unfolded to the 12. So the 10 unfolds to the 12, and that is the greater mysteries. Okay, so the 10 is the original greater mysteries, and then the 12 becomes the unfolded, the fully unfolded greater mysteries. And also, just keep this in mind. The 17 gnomes of Egypt, these are the combination. The 17 is the combination of the 7 lesser mysteries and the original 10 greater mysteries. Okay, so they're combined. And then we got into the proxy of the spirit in the dollar bill. Okay, so again, this is magic that begins in religion. This is fetishism. Okay, this is a very fragmented form of fetishism. So this is materialism. And we got into Laplanjian at Uxmal with the 9 pyramids in Mexico. We got into the gavel, which is the double-headed axe as well. And we also got into inundation and salvationism, which is we have to understand that the salvation myth begins in the stellar phase of the Egyptian mythos with Horus, the Heru or hero, as Sebek. And Sebek is basically this fish god, which ends up getting a crocodile head. And this Sebek Horus with the crocodile head is preserving the stellar in the solar. So Sebek is originally Horus the fish and later becomes the crocodile type, which is it's a convention of Horus during the stellar cult, the stellar cult phase of the Egyptian mythology. And this is typified in the inundation as a symbol of fertility and rejuvenation. And then what happens is when Christianity comes along and continues this deterioration of the solar cult, we get these popes that are wearing these mitre headdresses. And you can tell that the Pope is dressing or expressing as the fish god. Okay, so it's a very, very distorted and a deteriorated form of the Sebek fish god. Okay. And that's why the mitre looks like a fish. Or you could say it looks like a McDonald's large fry box. But, you know, this is a detritus of the fish god of Sebek, Sebek Horus. Okay. So we really have to pay attention to this because everything in between, all the way back to Babylon and beyond, we have to understand how to look at the archetypes. We have to be able to look at what they look like and what they really represent. Okay, because there's many different fish gods in between Sebek and the Pope of today. Okay, so we have to understand that anybody who is trying to become these gods is really just trying to embody, you know, some kind of, you know, egoic god living on earth. Okay. So it's all an illusion. It's all a facade. It's all a way to look as though they are God, but really they are just, you know, some dude wearing a McDonald's large fry box. Because that's what it is. It's just a show. It's not anything real. These people don't possess elemental powers. They know how to get people to you know, do their bidding. And that's, you know, this is mind control. They know how to get people to move in certain directions and think in certain ways. Okay, but and also, you know, they know how to get people to bend the knee and bow down to, you know, these types of people as though they're real gods or real messengers of God. You know, it's just like in the beginning of the show. This is about the claim to the Most High, okay? So we have to understand what this is really all about. And we got into the advents of Horus. So the first advent of Horus occurs during the stellar phase, okay, in the evolution of the Egyptian mythos, when Horus is only represented in zoo typology. He's not anthropomorphized yet, okay? And then the second advent of Horus occurs at the beginning of the solar phase of the Egyptian mythos. This is where Horus is. This is where Horus is anthropomorphized. He has human-like features or characteristics. So this anthropomorphized imagery is incorporated in the Egyptian pageantry. And the pageantry is the style, it's the ritual. Okay, that we can look at of this, you know, Egyptian pantheon of gods. Okay, so and then, you know, the last we got into a lot more, but Amsu Horus is the first given name to the risen Horus. Okay, and we're going to get into Amsu Horus as we, you know, go through the rest of the zodiac, and this is a very, very powerful aspect to this whole Egyptian mythology. And, you know, this is all part of the hero's journey, the science of the hero's journey. So it was really great having Doug back on. And of course, he really delivered some very important, powerful knowledge, very valuable knowledge that goes right with what I've been laying out. And so, you know, it's great that it all fits in together. And it just really gives a lot more to the unfoldment. And hopefully we get him back on again soon. So that way we can, you know, really pick his brain and get a lot more, you know, a lot more substance to go in between these episodes. And it will really help develop the bigger picture. So now, just really quick, just to get everybody, you know, back into where I was left off on show number 72, I'm not going to spend too much time on this. This is just to refresh your mind about 72. We talked about sign language being the art of tracing out nature or mimicking nature, you know, basically to act out symbolically. And this is really important to what I'm going to get into on the rest of the show. We got into pure forms that are discovered through the method of esoteric Freemasonry, which is about understanding the method of today in the conventional modern form of Freemasonry and also the ancient form of esoteric Freemasonry. And then we got into mythology, eschatology, hero cults. Just remember, hero cults is all about the stellar, the lunar, and the solar. I think anybody listening to this by now understands what these hero cults are or who these hero cults are, because it's about the stars, especially the northern circumpolar constellation being the Little Bear, the seven stars that never set, and also the lunar being the moon, and then the sun. Okay, so these three are the sciences associated with these celestial objects are the sciences, these are the teachers that are really the cosmic teachers, the cosmic parents, if you will, that are helping us understand who we are and what we're supposed to do on this planet. So we don't feel alone, so we don't feel left out, so we don't feel abandoned, because we're really not abandoned. We just have to know where to look. We have to know what to look for. And so these are the parents that we've been cut off from, especially the lunar and the stellar. Okay. So we got into totemic sociology being the study of human societies that basically had deep spiritual relationships with their environment, including animals and people, plants, other objects. They were very animistic, okay? And that's really what we're trying to do, is get back to our animistic worldview. So it's a symbolic network with nature through signs and modes. It's a moral framework to learn through nature. That's what it's all about. We got into rejuvenation, mental material death, spiritual rebirth, the zodiac, the inner journey of the soul, darkness, soil, underworld, Amenta, the Duat, the tomb, the womb, death, metamorphosis, natural law, religion, mystery traditions, mystery schools, the Little Bear, the Great Year Cycle, Stellar Mythos, Lunar Mythos, Solar Mythos, Osiris, Horus, Esoteric Freemasonry, Anthropomorphism, Preserving, and Theophanism. Okay, so we're going to keep on expanding on all this. And also, it's just to refresh our minds and get us to see the bigger picture. And so, just as I have talked about in the last few shows, I actually want people to go to the very first slide. And we're going to go to this slide that I put together of the zodiac. And we're going to follow along with the zodiac as I go through this first part that I've been going through on these shows. And so if you'll follow along and really pay attention to where we are going through this circular tracing board, it will really help put things in perspective with what I'm saying, okay? So as I've stated on the last few shows, we're keeping this zodiac in our mind, and now we can just look at it. And this will keep us oriented, okay? This will keep us, keep our mind in the right orientation. So this is what's going to help us understand what it is that we're hearing. And Everything that I'm going to go through right now, I've already said, but I'm going to switch it up a little bit. I'm going to add in and I'm going to take out some stuff as I go through this basic little ritual, if you will, that I'm doing while I'm explaining the bridge, okay, that I've been talking about at the beginning of every show, okay, once I go through the recap. So we are currently still drawing out or tracing from the chest of the third degree tracing board of ancient and modern esoteric Freemasonry, which is analogous to the bottom half of this zodiac that you're looking at, that you should be looking at. So this is really the whole zodiac. Okay, it's not just the bottom half, it's the whole zodiac. But we're going through the lower dark half, okay? From Libra all the way to Pisces. But we're basically, you know, more in the Sagittarius to Capricorn area because that's where the eschatology really is taking place. And so just, you know, think about this too. Just think of the act of tracing, okay? I've been emphasizing this word tracing because that's what this episode is all about. So the act of tracing with a piece of transparent paper, I want you to think of this as the transparent paper overlaying an image, okay? So the act of tracing on this image, overlaying this image, becomes the act of drawing. So once you start to trace, because remember, the tracing paper, most paper that we use to trace is not clear, okay? Unless you're doing like, you know, cartooning, then typically there are frames that they make that are pretty clear and you can see what you're tracing. But typically it's like a, you know, kind of a transparent, kind of foggy paper, okay? It's not completely transparent. It's not like it's glass, okay? So you're literally drawing out an image using a tracing method. So when you have the paper over the image, you are tracing the outline and trying to get the details as close as possible to the actual image, right? So you're literally drawing out an image, and this is the exoteric art that teaches us the esoteric art of tracing. So this is basically what esoteric Freemasonry is all about. It's a method. It's a method of tracing. So just think about the image that's being traced, okay? The image being traced can be looked at as the trestle board. And the transparent paper is the mist. It's the fog. Okay? So think about that. Because remember, when we're going through the Duat, through the underworld, this is representative of the mist or the fog. Okay? Where you can't really see completely through it. It's not very clear. Right? And so the act of tracing is the act of drawing out the image out of the fog, out of the mist for clarity. So when you're drawing that image, you're trying to get clarity. Okay, so let's just say that the image is on a relief, on a stone that you can't take with you. But in order to study that image, maybe you take a piece of paper and you take some charcoal and you brush it over the paper to get the image onto the paper. Or maybe you just trace it out with a marker or whatever you use just to get the image. Okay? This is the art of drawing out the information, to pull the information out in a way that is tracing the information. And so the better the drawing, the better the clarity. So following along the lines and really drawing exactly what you see is going to bring more clarity with you as you take that information with you, because you're not going to just stay there at the wall with the relief on it. You're not going to just stay there, staring at that wall. You're going to take it with you and go home and contemplate. Because now you have the image with you. So if you can think of this as, putting it into your mind, tracing out information like these, like the zodiac, like all the houses of the zodiac, the crosshairs of the zodiac, the four corners, the circular wheel, the names, the numbers. Pay attention to the symbols. Pay attention to the flow where it starts. And so what you're doing is you're tracing the information. And when you're tracing the information, just like, tracing the information in the tracing boards, being, these 3 degrees. When you're tracing the 3 degrees, you're tracing the self. You're tracing life. You're tracing nature. You're tracing creation. And the modern third degree tracing board has Hiram Abiff as the central legend. And so when we pay attention to the central legend, the center point, so in the third degree, the central point is Hiram Abiff, then we correspond that to the zodiac. And Hiram Abiff is not the central point of the zodiac, but the science of Hiram Abiff relates, it corresponds to Osiris, which is so much older and so much bigger. And Osiris's tracing board is the zodiac. So Osiris is the central legend of the zodiac, and he's not the only one. There was many more that followed Osiris, like Jesus Christ, but there's many more solar messiahs in between. But this is about understanding the solar, it's about tracing the solar mythos through Jesus Christ, through the other solar messiahs, through Osiris. And Hiram Abiff is basically the newest version that, if we study Hiram Abiff, we can see that it's basically being passed on from this way bigger legend being Osiris, something so much more grand. So Hiram Abiff is a very important part, a very important aspect to getting back to tracing out Osiris. So once we get to Osiris, now we can start to go to and fro. We can go, all the way back to the stellar through Osiris, but then we can also go fro. We can go in the, forward direction into the modern world with Osiris as well. So this is a very, very big trace. We're tracing out all the aspects, all the pieces, if you will, of Osiris. And just remember that 555 being the number of Hiram Abiff is also XXX, which is Osiris as the five preserved in the stellar. It's Osiris preserved in the lunar, and it's also Osiris preserved in the solar. And this is advanced into the 555 or even 15 of Hiram Abiff. So Hiram Abiff is preserving all of these fives, all of the X's. And so the more that we understand what's really going on here, the more we understand how important Hiram Abiff really is as far as a a myth, as far as a central legend that is helping us, you know, find all this, you know, trace out all this preserved information back to this major elemental aspect of the solar cult. And I know it's really complex, but the more that we understand the complexity of it, the more that we're going to be able to handle this type of information, and therefore we can start to restore pure forms. So we are in the process of remembering these pure forms and discovering the spirit of true care in order to rebuild and polish and strengthen the modern pillar of today, which is this huge sacred bridge that is barely connected to the ancient pillar of the past. And you could look at the ancient pillar of the past being the stellar pillar. And then you can also look at the archway as the lunar crescent, the lunar cult. Because we're not going to truly get back to the stellar without understanding the science of the lunar. So the lunar crescent is so vital to understand as a bridge, as an archway. It's not just a barge, it's an archway. And also just remember that, you know, this archway is our connection to the Most High, truly, the science of the Most High. Okay? And, you know, so this symbolically is about being cut off, without the lunar crescent, without care. It's about being cut off from origins. And if people are cut off from their origins, then people who know this, who are dominators, who are sorcerers, who are ego-driven authority, so-called authority figures, these people own the minds of those who are cut off from their origins. And the ruling priest class of this world, they are they're top-notch dividers because they are basically masters of balkanization. They're masters of dividing people internally and keeping them in internal opposition with themselves and also with others, because really they're divided as well. Okay, that's what sorcerers are. Sorcerers are divided, and therefore they project that onto other people through fear and keep them divided internally and with each other. So the ruling class psychopaths of this world, you could look at them as the ruling class psychopaths. Think about that. They are the ruling class psychopaths. Okay, there's some green language right there. Because the paths of the cycles rule the people. They rule all life. Because they are law, and law rules us. These are the natural laws that rule us. Okay, and so these psychopaths, they want to usurp this energy. They want to usurp. They want to play God, and they want to be the psychopaths, the law. Okay, that's why they create man's law. That's why they create laws that oppress the people to keep them above the rest of the people through fear, through duress, coercion, violence. So they are playing as the psychopaths because they are the psychopaths. And so what we as conscious beings are trying to overcome, and what we're even trying to help these psychopaths and pretty much everybody else in the world overcome, is the neglect, you know, giving no real attention to what's important, forgetting about it, forgetting about what's important, having no real responsibility, having zero empathy or zero care. So being very apathetic and willfully ignoring knowledge or information that is present. So being ignorant. This is basically what has obliterated the connecting archway, the crescent, back to this ancient sacred pillar. Okay? So it's not just these psychopaths or these psychopaths, these people who want to, you know, rule the world and rule the minds of the people in order to rule the world. It's also, it's mostly the people of the world in general that have destroyed most of this crescent, most of the care, most of the sacred feminine, most of the cosmic mother, if you will. Okay? And what these podcasts are really all about here in the cubbyhole is restoring this sacred bridge back to its functional form, because it's about understanding that the better and stronger the connection is, the arch, the archway to the source, the more clarity and understanding of our sovereignty. And this is what helps us get out of the condition of ignorance and neglect and laziness and cowardice, and ultimately slavery. And we're doing this as a correspondence in our minds, in our hearts, which is what will manifest. It will manifest if we flip the inversion that's going on in most of our hearts and minds. We have to flip the inversion, because the inversion is materialism. We're living in a material-based world, and we don't need to. We have to flip the, you know, we have to bring the spirit into the material to realize they're in the same place at the same time, that they're not separate. So it's a very high level of responsibility. We have to cultivate care. We have to continue to ritualistically cultivate care, because we're living in a world where we don't care, where we have basically cultivated apathy. So we have to learn to care, because we are a species that has the ability to be conditioned. Our mind has to be conditioned. This is what allows us to be conditioned to carry out the evil deeds of the dark rulers of the world, or it is a way for us to condition ourselves to care enough to be responsible, so we don't need these psychopaths of the world to rule over us. So we got to learn to care. We got to learn to take notes on this type of information, share this type of information, first understand it, and then learn to organize it. And then, you know, refine the information and then pass it on for evolution, for freedom. So it is our divine conscious connection with nature. It is our sovereignty. It is our direct lineage back to the ancient adepts of the past, who were the raised elders, the learned men and women who made major sacrifices to preserve this information, to preserve this beautiful light. And they did this in stone. They did this in the stories of the mythos and, you know, in so many different sacred traditions as a means of giving people the ability to evolve and live harmonious in nature, therefore being free, being truly sovereign. So in order to discover these preserved sciences that have been passed down, we are symbolically journeying through the soul receiver, which is Amenta. Amenta is the soul receiver. And then we're going down through the underworld. Okay, this is the soul receiver going through the trials. The soul's going through the trials of the Duat or the underworld. And the reason for this is to bridge the gap of this sacred bridge, to bridge the gap of ignorance and neglect, and, you know, basically to unify internally. So we do this through the occult systems, the traditions. We're using the esoteric systems that are found in the mist of Avalon, or the realm of the dead. So this is where the behavior is measured, and what we know is measured. So this is the principle of Thoth, okay? Because Thoth is the measurer. Thoth measures the cycles. Thoth is associated with the measurement of karma. And this goes all the way back to Tot, which is in the lunar cult. That's why Thoth is associated with the moon. So we are symbolically sowing knowledge in the black soil of the sacred garden and hopefully reaping more truth, more wisdom. And we are filling the grail by demystifying the occult to unhide the knowledge of the occult so we can see it, so we can understand it, so we can live according to it, which is living according to natural law. Because it's about finding our care in the heart of darkness. Now, if you're still looking at this zodiacal image, this is something that I actually remastered and sharpened, that I actually premiered in my Earthbrain 3 presentation. And I want people to look at this circular tracing board. Okay, so we have to understand that we are beings of light. All of us are beings of light. And symbolically, the sun, or the soul, the Latin soul, S-O-L, is a correspondence to each one of us. So the sun is light. You are light. Each one of us is light. So each one of us is soul. It is our teacher. The sun is our teacher of our soul through the Osirian ritual in the solar aspect of the ancient Egyptian mythos. So in the beginning of the story of the Osirian myth, he starts out as god of the living in the upper half of the zodiac, because he's corresponding to God as in the gift of God, being the R complex of the brain. And the R complex of the brain, the crocodile brain, the reptile brain, this is the ego. This is associated with ego because it controls the profane. It controls the uninitiated. It controls the unaware or unconscious humans of the world. People who walk through life in their lower animal part, in a lower frequency. They do this unconsciously as, you know, just being part of the herd. And these people have no idea of anything to do with the occult or the spiritual realm at all, because they're living upright in materialism. They're living with a more physical five sense lens. So the R complex is being ruled, or they're being ruled by their R complex. And the R complex is the gift of the Creator to have this experience that we're having. But it's just an experience that is felt in a world of materialism. But when someone actually goes on the journey spiritually, this is when one develops their consciousness to where they no longer need the R complex to be the ruler of their mind, where they can actually develop the neocortex of the brain and actually make decisions consciously. And I know that, you know, this could be possibly hard for people to hear that type of rhetoric, but it is what it is. Human beings that operate from the reptile complex or the mammalian complex only are basically in the frequency of a lower animal part, because they haven't reached the neocortex part of the brain. They haven't developed that part of the brain yet. And this allows the psychopaths, the sorcerers of the world, it allows them to run any type of programs that they want on humans that are in this condition, because they run on physical worldviews only. They're not educated with logic. They don't have any understanding of any real reason, or they don't understand morality. They don't understand the difference between right behavior and wrong behavior. A lot of people say they know morality, but they are so dishonest and they cannot demonstrate it. They're very, very they're in a very low frequency. They're in an animal frequency. And it has to be said like that because a human being has reason. A human being has conscious free will. A human being has a conscience, period, which is understanding the difference between right and wrong and choosing right action over wrong action. That's about having a conscience. So basically, someone in this frequency is basically in a all fear and emotional existence, no true conscious understanding of reality at all. So this allows these highly educated dark psychologists who understand enough about reality and about the psychology to play God and rule the living like Osiris, but without any true, obviously with no true benevolence or care for the evolution of the species, because it's all Satanism. It's all self-preservationism. So this is why the soul or sun going down into Libra on the right from Virgo to Libra in the, you know, so going down into autumn into the tomb in the west below the horizon. This is analogous to Osiris being deposed by Typhon or Set or darkness as a means of no longer ruling the living or serving the living. The light is no longer needed to rule the R complex of the day sky. So this is about the aphanism, the disappearance of light, the concealment. It becomes the concealment of light. So this is truly about the self entering into the middle chamber of the second degree. So this is where someone will be basically in a state of chapel perilous. So this is about entering the unknown realm. This is where the rite of passage truly begins. So this is the confusion stage, having no direction. So this is about being disoriented. And this is the internal confrontation stage. So it's symbolically in this area, going from Virgo to Libra, entering into Amenta. This is symbolically foggy and blurry or misty. So this is where the initiate generates the faith. This is where you can generate the faith that truth is real. And so therefore, there has to be a leap of faith into and through the mist and hopes that there will be more truth revealed and hopes that there will be some kind of clarity, because that's what truth is. It's clarity. So this is why the mist equals the spiral staircase, because they're both mysterious. Because you can't see around the bend of the spiral staircase. You can't see through the mist, right? You just have to have faith that there will be more stairs or that there will be clarity once you go through the mist. And think about that word mysterious. You know, there's a little bit of green language in there because, I mean, obviously I've talked about the mystery is the mist story, but also you could say when it comes to mysterious is mist stare I us. So in this sense that you can't really see what's up ahead because you're going either through a mist or you're going through a stair. You're taking the stairs with your eye. And so it's hard to see because there's internal confusion. That's why we're going into the realm of the shadow. So you can't really see or understand the truth at first when you're going into the shadow realm. It's not clear. It's hidden in the mist. So this is why faith is required that truth is going to be revealed. Faith is required that more truth will be unveiled, either as a step of the unfolding or unwinding spiral staircase, or truth will be unveiled once the mist has faded out into clarity. So allegorically, in the solar cult, Set, when he is dismembering his brother Osiris, the sun, the one, going down below the horizon into the earthly square and scattering him to the four corners of that square. This is where the light goes out. So this is where the confusion begins, because the light is scattered to the four corners of the earth, the four corners of the square. So this is about the lower self being scatterbrained, being fogged, being confused and disoriented, feeling alone, feeling isolated, feeling lost, and then beginning to realize that only you, the individual, being the initiate, can truly take responsibility to figure this out and put the self back together by having faith that there's going to be more truth. So having faith in the self that there's going to be more truth. And of course, you know, having the faith that you can find those scattered pieces of that light in the center. Because this is what's going to give you the light to find your way back home, to light that lantern, to relight the lantern. The flame, the internal flame at the center of the heart of darkness. And do this to develop consciousness without the guidance of the R complex or mammalian complex, where they're divided, where they're apart, where they're dominated by others, by psychopaths, by dark psychologists who understand that someone being apart in their R complex and mammalian complex are easier to control. So it's about bringing those together. And bringing those together is about the neocortex coming together. And this is also about discovering the four corners of the scattered light to reunite at the center, the fifth point. So, you know, think about this. I want people to really see this with an image, okay? I want you to follow along with me as we draw. I want us to draw an image together. So if you can get a piece of paper, get a pen or pencil, and if you have a compass, I think that'll be really great. If you have a square, that's even better, because then you're actually working with the physical tools to see a spiritual unfoldment. Okay, so what I want you to do is draw a square. Okay, it doesn't have to be perfect, but just draw a square. And when you draw this square, I'm hoping that it's going to look like a square. It should look like a square. It shouldn't look like a rectangle. And what I want you to do is draw an X. So that means draw a point from a diagonal line from each corner of the square. So that means that you're going to have a line that goes diagonal from the top left to the bottom right, and then a line from the bottom left to the top right. Okay. So this is what's going to help you find the center. This is what's going to help you find the point in the center. Okay. So this is spirit. The point in the center is spirit, because you have your five elements being earth, water, air, and fire, and then your fifth element being the ether, being the spirit at the center, because spirit is found at the center. Okay? So with your compass, if you have a compass, if you don't have a compass, don't worry. But with your compass, I want you to put one point of the compass on the center point of the square. And then on the other point with the pencil or pen or whatever you're using on the other part of the compass to be able to draw the circle, I want you to start at the closest line of the square. So if you don't have a compass, just go to the right line, the vertical line of the square, and just put a little point right in the middle somewhere, okay? Just try to put it as close to the middle as possible. And then from that point, I want you to arc a circle all the way, touching all four middle parts of the square around the point in the center. And what you should have, once you're done, is a circle within a square. Okay, where the circle is touching all four sides of the square. Not all four corners, but all four sides of the square. Okay? And what this is what I just, basically what I just covered is the middle point representing the spirit, which is represented by the sun. This central light is swallowed by the earth. So just imagine that the western horizon is the square. So when the sun is going down into the earth, that's how it looks. Obviously, it's not going in the earth. But when it goes down below the horizon, you have to look at that as the sun going into the square. And when it's going into the square, being Earth, or being the underworld, being Amenta, this is where the soul, the center, is dismembered. This is Osiris being dismembered by the dark square being set, or Typhon, okay? And, you know, you also have to look at this as the square being in the south being Sut, okay? But that's, I'm going to get more into that as we go forward, but I just want you to pay attention to this in the solar aspect, okay? So this is where the central light is divided into four parts. Now, it's 14, okay? 14 parts is what Osiris is divided into, but we have to understand that it is cryptic, okay? Because the spread of the four parts into the four corners, so you're looking at that square, the four corners is where the light is spread to, which means spread outside of the circle, which is spread outside the temple, okay? So you have to look at it like that too, okay? So we have to understand that the four corners are the four corners of Earth, and this is why we have to understand that 14 really is 1 and 4, or simply 5, because it's pure. And this is basically one major way that the Aten is carried in the 14 pieces of Osiris, because you have to look at it as the pieces being 1 and 4. It's cryptic. So the one phallus and the four main elementals being earth, air, water, and fire. The phallus is the spirit. So that's why we have to find the phallus, or, you know, this is where Thoth fashions a phallus, because it's about understanding that the spirit has been lost, the soul has been lost. So think about it like this. You have four corners that are earthly, which are outside of the spirit, outside of the center, outside of the circle. And the four corners contain the circle, which means they also contain the dot. which also means they contain the 10, the Aten, the 1 and the 0, because the 1 is the point and the circle is the 0. So the four corners is Isis, which is material. Isis is the 4. Isis is pregnant with the point, the soul at the center. She becomes pregnant with the soul at the center, being the sun, being Horus. So the four corners are really the four angels because they're angles. So the supporters of the spirit is really the supporters of Osiris, which is Isis supporting Osiris. So it's material supporting or concealing. This is the aphanism. It's concealing the light, concealing the spirit at the center, which is, this is also animistic. This is the animistic component, the animating spirit. So hopefully that makes sense. Hopefully you actually went through that with me, and I appreciate anybody that did, because drawing it yourself, you get to see it. You get to go through the motion while I'm explaining all this, and hopefully I did a good job explaining it so that way you really see what it is that we're dealing with. Okay? So when we think of the drama of the Egyptian Netcher Set in the solar cult as the, you know, solar deity of chaos and his brother Osiris, then we see that this behavior of Set takes place in the solar cult only. So therefore, it is also about children that are under the solar science, that really don't understand the science because they're cut off from their cosmic mother, being the lunar and the stellar. So you have a whole bunch of children that are running around in this solar cult umbrella, not being supervised by their cosmic parents. So that means that this allows for the big brother of Osiris to take the reign and can become, you know, because Set is the association with Set in the solar cult is that he is jealous. So he becomes dangerously jealous. Okay. And this is what the dark ruling class is usurping. They're jealous. And we have to understand that the jealousy runs very, very deep. And Set, as the big uncle, but also brother, is he becomes a bully. Okay, this is the association. I'm not trying to confound this, but we have to understand where this behavior is coming from, as you know, coming from the myth, coming from the drama. Okay. And there's no one to protect his brother Osiris. There's no one to protect Osiris. So he is chopped up by his brother. So he becomes very dangerous. The light becomes chopped up and spread out and hidden, occulted by the dark occult, who are usurping the power. They're trying to be Set because they're operating from the dark. They're operating from ignorance. They're operating from jealousy. They're operating from greed. And Set can basically get away with fighting him, fighting Osiris in this case, because Osiris has been cut off from his, or from their cosmic mother and father. And so that allows Set to kill him to some degree, which means that there ultimately has to be a rise of the hero or the child that's being bullied to fight back and grow up, to become spiritual, to raise. This is what the solar mythos, especially dealing with the Osiris and Set and Horus, this is what it should teach us about our human condition of today and really the past 40,000 plus years. So I want to talk about Anubis, because Anubis is the intuitive aspect of consciousness, which becomes the guide to face the darkness, to face the dogmas of the upper material dominated world internally, in order to proceed through the duat, through the underworld trials, through the internal shadow trials. So the eschatology, being the study of final things, is about the sun, the soul, waning down into the tomb, the point within the square, down to the 21st of December. Okay? And this is corresponding to the material dominated self waning down to its death of reign, its death of rulership over the whole brain, which you could look at as death of the ego dominance or death of the material dominance. Okay, so I'm going to briefly continue to talk about the three hero cults, and then I'm going to get into the profane trace. And hopefully we can, you know, ride out on the sacred trace. And if we have time, we'll get to the logos, but we're definitely going to get into that on the next episode. So everything that I just explained is going to prepare us for the symbolic science of Thoth. And Thoth is a very, very important netcher. Elemental power. Thoth is a major aspect of this whole part of the myth, where we're going down into the underworld, down into the trials, down between Sagittarius and Capricorn. And, you know, this is really where we're going to find so much value in the sacred trace and cycles, and the importance of cycles, and it's going to get very, very deep. So that being said, I'm going to continue again talking about the hero cults, being the stellar, the lunar, and the solar. And as far as I know, the term hero cult, this comes from the British anthropologist Dr. Alfred Cort Hayden. And he was alive and did his work back in the late 1800s, early 1900s. And he's the one who named Sut, Horus, and Shu as the heroes. And I think it's really important to, you know, point this out, because Churchward actually agreed with Hayden's term for the First Holy Trinity, as well as the three Egyptian totemic cults, or what he refers to as the hero cults. And he got this idea from doing his research from this anthropologist, Dr. Hayden. And as we study these nature cults, these hero cults, we're going to begin to deeply understand the significance of the term, if you haven't already. But we have to understand that this term is so powerful, because it's about reviving the hero in you. It's about understanding that these cults are preserving this eschatology to revive the hero, to come back to their connection to nature, back to source, back to responsibility, back to freedom, back to sovereignty, and so on. And what I want to really, you know, keep hammering on is how these hero cults are cultures. They're cultures of people. They're cultures of priest classes who grew and developed the sciences of the cycles of the stars, the moon, and the sun. Okay, they grew, they developed these sciences, and as a result, you have these cults, these cultures. So keep that in mind, and also keep that in mind as the powers of Thoth. Okay, now, as I stated many times, the stars and the moon and the sun are the most important extraterrestrials. They are the true extraterrestrials that we really need to pay close attention to, because, and also the planets as well, because they're the most important teachers from the celestial realm, okay, from the above. They are the true cosmic inspirationals or inspirations. So they are the true cosmic masterclass. And we humans are the sovereign terrestrial students of these cosmic teachers. And then there are the false masterclass, quote unquote, teachers, really the dominators, who are teaching people what to believe rather than how to think or how to learn. And these people believe that they're higher than these cosmic teachers. They're the claimers of the Most High. So we have to reclaim our connection to the Most High by demystifying the occult, so we're not ruled by these dark occultists, and therefore, once we do that, we can take back our responsibility, and we won't need dominators to, you know, tell us what to believe any longer, because we'll know what's true. We'll know who the real authority is, which is not man. Man is not the real authority. So ever since the early totemic era, being roughly 600,000 years ago, the beginning of the hero cults, so this is the beginning of the hero cults being the stellar, man has traced out the cycles of the cosmic bodies in order to put a finer point on time measurement. So again, keep Thoth in mind. Keep Thoth in mind, or Thoth, okay? So this is why there were stone masons, people who were master craftsmen and geometers and master symbolists and architects. These people understood how to build time measuring objects like what we see with the pyramids that could last the test of time, like the Mayans and the Incas. But the true original pyramid builders were even more caring than just building these temples. They even went further and stored the higher knowledge in the Little Bear constellation as well, and many other constellations, but specifically the Little Bear, because the Little Bear is the seven stars that never set. This is a place that could never be destroyed. So they were very genius in their endeavors to constellate, to connect the dots and place that information into the seven stars, the northern circumpolar constellation, being Ursa Minor or the Little Dipper, okay? But man didn't invent the Little Dipper or the Little Bear. Man didn't build the Little Bear. He traced nature. He constellated. He traced time in cycles in order to discover the Most High, being a cosmic tracing board. So the Urnography is a tracing board for us, okay? Because it's about constellating. It's about connecting the dots. So man traced upon the trestle of the cosmos of life. He traced the science through intelligent measurement and also mimicking nature. That's what totemism is. It's a language of mimicking nature to understand it, to at least understand it better, to understand how to communicate within it. So Doug actually gave a really great analogy of the unfoldment of this sacred trace in episode 73 when he gave this amazing analogy of pure forms into fragmented form with the brochure analogy, where he said that the brochure is first packaged neatly as the pure form. And then as it unfolds, as it's being unfolded into more complex forms or parts, it becomes harder to remember the unfoldment. It becomes more of a responsibility to remember how to refold that brochure correctly back to its proper folded form. And that's the true art of tracing, which is all about following the folded sacred line back to pure forms by learning the unfoldment, because it's a high form of responsibility. It is the rememberment. So if we relate this to the ancient Egyptian unfoldment of the mythos, or the evolution of the mythos, I think it will definitely help us sink in the importance of the trace and the refoldment, if you will, because we're retracing our steps back to source. And also, I think, this really is what I was hoping it would do, is just, set the tone for what I'm going to cover now, which is I'm going to basically get into some very important distinctions between the sacred trace and the profane trace. Okay, so this is all about the art of tracing. And also, most traditions of the world, many of them at least, make mention of the trace, as far as, what humans encounter of the creator and the creator's creation. And this is about pure forms, or, what's holy or sacred, and discovering that, looking for it. So then the opposite of that would be the profane trace, which is about fragmentation, or what is unholy or not pure or not sacred. Okay, so it's the opposite. And the profane is also talked about in a lot of these traditions as well. So we're going to go to the very first slide that says the profane trace. And you'll notice that I put quotes around the word trace. And it's really important to understand that when we're talking about the sacred and profane, we're talking about pure forms being the sacred, and then we're talking about the profane being the fragmentation of pure forms, okay, or of the sacred. So we have to understand that in order to understand the cause, we first have to outline the effects. We have to trace out the effects, to trace it back to the cause. And in a world where most people sadly don't understand causality yet, there comes the, this is the profane trace, having no reverence for any cause, having no care for any cause. Okay, just stuck in the effects. So profane means lack of respect for the sacred or ignorant of the sacred rites. And, you know, the literal definition for profane is very, very powerful because it means outside the temple. And this means the physical worldview, having the five sense worldview, okay? Not having an understanding of the spirit. Okay, no real spiritual journey to discover truth. And this is the condition that most people are in because most people refuse to look in the temple, their own temple. So one who never looks inward is referred to as the uninitiated. So the profane is the uninitiated. No real understanding of the mystery because there's a condition of the profane. And then the next one is confounding pure forms. So the profane use sacred words. They use sacred objects and sacred gestures. They use sacred symbols, but they have no real understanding or real care for them. They confuse and mix these things up with their lack of knowledge, which is ignorance, and also it's a perpetual negligence of the knowledge that's passed down or not passed down. And so an example of this would be that people literalize the story of King Arthur because they've lost the understanding of the allegory of King Arthur. So they literalize King Arthur. They historicize King Arthur in the whole story because they don't understand how to read the internal allegory. They're very ignorant of the sacred or the pure forms. So the profane, they confuse allegory with literacy. They confuse non-temporal with temporal. And this is why it's so important to pay attention to the lunar light, because this is where the science of the spirit in the eschatology gets lost, in the materialism, what becomes materialism in the solar. Okay, so that's a huge, huge deal, and I'm going to keep on talking about that till the end of time, because that's where the problem lies. It lies in the lunar, the solely lunar, but this is where the corruption takes place. This is why we have to understand that the lunar light is not just the literal sunlight. It is the spiritual light that is passed down from the stellar, from the symbolic Most High, where the knowledge of the Most High is stored. So this is a very, very important part of understanding why we cannot stay in this condition of the profane and why we are tracing the solar mythos the wrong way. We're tracing the solar mythos with literacy. This is the euhemerism aspect or the euhemerism belief. Okay? So then there is time-killing routine. So this is about boredom. This is just, you know, wasting time, doing things that stagnate growth. This is about abusive habits, like overindulging and watching lots of movies, useless movies, useless TV programs, drinking lots of alcohol, lots of sugar drinks, playing video games 24/7. Social media is basically at the hands of everybody with a phone, so they're always scrolling, and basically anything taking the attention away from the spiritual development. So we're going to go talk about the trace now, okay, the quote-unquote trace. So the trace in this case with the profane means the antithesis of the sacred trace, which is about spirituality drifting away in the four corners of the earth. So this is about not having real direction, being disoriented in all different directions. Okay, so basically just disoriented off the path, off the divine imprint, being without a trace of understanding anything about the self or about the world. And then there's the, projecting assumptions. And this is a major profane trace because this is about making opinions worth any real knowledge. You know, my truth, your truth, my truth, with no real research, no real trace of any evidence of any validity. It's just, this is solipsism. Okay. So then there's defacing or distorting the sacred trace, which is the profane behavior that creates a shaky foundation. Okay. So it's about starting off in a crooked way. It's not ma'at, meaning straight, that which is straight. It's not starting with a straight, sound foundation. Okay. So it seeks to cover up the truth. So this is part of the Setian principle. So people who don't want the truth and they don't want it to get out if it's, you know, coming through. Okay. If they see it coming through, they don't want it. And so they want it to leave. They don't want the truth, period. And these types of people, the profane will seek to fabricate information in order to fit that information into their agendas, to fit their delusions. And this is what cuts ties with the sacred and essentially covers the truth up, at least, you know, temporarily. Okay, because the truth will always surface. It's always there. It just might be covered up for a long period of time. So then there is following trends instead of any type of real meaning in life. So it's about blindly blending in or fitting in through groupthink or through mob think instead of tracing out the sacred or tracing out truth or pure forms where there's meaning that can be discovered. So politically, most people are very trendy in their political beliefs. They unconsciously follow or trace the political herd, political gang, if you will, in order to service the self, because it's a material prospect. It's all about, comfortable lies instead of, you know, facing the uncomfortable truth of reality. And this is something that many of the so-called freedom speakers, people who think that they're speaking words of freedom, are very much unaware about themselves spiritually. So many people who are freedom-oriented or think that they're freedom-oriented have not even begun their true internal temple spiritual journey. So they are still the profane. You know, and these are people that call themselves anarchists and volunteerists, and they don't understand or refuse to understand that they are very much politically polarized in the dross, in the minutiae of the dialectics, of the polarized political dialectics, because they don't understand anything about the brain or the mind. They haven't done enough work internally. They don't realize that they're politically materialized in their behavior, where their attention is. And you can know this, because if you're really paying attention to their rhetoric, you can see how people are still in the box of politics or in the box of government, because they're not talking about the inside of the temple or the occult. They're talking about the outside. They're talking about the division outside. They're not talking about the internal divide. They're not talking about the eschatology. So they're very unaware of the spiritual awakening, the true spiritual journey. They're still on the floor, not understanding the difference between darkness and light. They're still wandering in the mist without any real care. Therefore, they don't even have any real power. They're not going to find any real power, internal empowerment, by fighting this, you know, political system, because the political system is an illusion. It's a manifestation of ignorance of the mind internally. That's all it is. So once we do the work internally, then we can manifest a non-political world, because politics will always be social Darwinism. And social Darwinism is an illusion. It's an illusion. It's a dog-eat-dog illusion. So we have to get out of this us versus them mentality. That's what people like this are stuck in. And they don't realize it because, again, they are ignoring the inner temple. They're still on the outside of the temple. Therefore, it is profane. It means that they're uninitiated, and therefore they are operating in a profane trace. So the profane trace at the bottom of the slide is something that echoes or imitates the sacred, but is disconnected. It's disoriented, no direction, or it's emptied of the original meaning because it's dismembered. That's why we must remember ourselves by going through the duat, by going through, you know, symbolically, but also symbolically is about learning the associations that we need to learn about ourselves. This is about doing the shadow work, truly. So that's why these mystery traditions are present. That's why they're here. They're not just here to suck people into some kind of religious cult, which they can be, but that's not their intent. That's not the reason for them. The reason is to learn the truth. So the profane trace is a gesture that is rooted in truth, but it's repeated in the shadows of ignorance. And we have to understand that ignorance is evil. Ignorance is evil because it's about ignoring information that is present. Information that is at your fingertips. So if you're ignoring this information, this is what makes someone evil, especially if it's information regarding, you know, truth and freedom, which means anything to do with the human condition, anything to do with the inner temple. If you're ignoring that, it just remains evil. It remains the four corners of the earth with no center. That's really what evil is, because Eve is ill, the sacred feminine. Eve is not healed yet, okay, so to speak, allegorically, okay? The sacred feminine is not healed. The sacred feminine is not raised. The spirit is not raised yet. So this profane trace has no spiritual significance. It's not transcendent. So we're going to go to the next slide, and we're going to really spend some time on this. This is the profane trace with the fragmentation of the sacred. So this is about vestigial forms by way of emulation, synchronization, ritual, and mimicking. So we're going to start with emulation. Now, emulation is about being the thoughtless copying of people. Okay? So it's the shallow or unreflective copying of external form that is divorced from its internal or inner meaning or essence. So, you know, just think about how trashy the music is on the radio of today. And really how trashy it's been for a very long time, but especially the mainstream songs that we hear on the radio. And then we have, you know, little kids, even most adults that sing along to the profanity, the profanity in the songs, the vulgarity, the negative, you know, words that they're using, because it's all about word spells. So they're tracing word spells and they don't even know it. So they do this without any scrutiny or any thinking involved, for the most part. You know, some parents out there, I give credit to for not letting their kids listen to a lot of this crap. But even they don't understand. They're not going further in their work, in their maturity, to really help educate their children of what they're really hearing. They're just keeping them from hearing it instead of actually teaching them what is really taking place. So a lot of kids, a lot of people emulate what they hear or who they're listening to in a very unreflective way. They're not truly listening to the words. They're not listening to the lyrics. And so these lyrics, a lot of these vulgar, profane lyrics are just going right into their subconscious without their knowing or without being conscious of what's really taking place. And then they act out in the world with a very low resolution behavior with their words and with their tones, with their behavior, with their attitude. So they try to emulate their favorite artists because they want to be more like them, because they have, you know, things that they don't have. They have fame. They have money. They have, you know, popularity. So people also emulate their favorite celebrity They emulate their styles. They copy their styles, their characteristics. They try to behave like them, regardless of whether they seem moral or not, just because of what they have. Because they have, again, material possessions like money, fame, and popularity. And then look at the parents, especially socially engineered, destroyed parents, and their relatives, and their friends. You know, children unconsciously trace these parents, these people, they trace them out because they think this is the way to be. Because that's why symbolically a child is small. So they look up to their parents. And symbolically, that means they look up to them for what to do in this world. But what they're looking up to them for ends up being that the way that they're behaving is a socially acceptable way to be, whether it's moral or immoral. And then they grow up truly unraised, and then they perpetuate that behavior or that attitude or those attitudes and belief systems onto their children and friends and family. And then there's the shallow imitation of other people's identity or content, where they directly use someone else's work as their own. They make it seem like the work that they're putting out is their own without, you know, giving any credence. And they basically claim that they came up with the content on their own when it's clear that they didn't. And so, you know, when these people are confronted, a lot of these people are so ego identified that they claim they never heard of the other content creator because they don't want to be put on blast. They don't want to be called out. And, you know, they want to believe that this content is theirs, that they own it and that they came up with it and that, you know, this is what is owned by them. But what's really profane, what's really, you know, troublesome is if what they copy has any real value and it's being used for immoral or monetary reasons or for fame. So this type of person doesn't even know the value of the content that they're ripping off. They just see it as a way of getting popular or getting money. And, you know, this is plagiarizing. They don't care about truth or freedom. They only care about popularity and money. They don't care about how the form, the pure forms, are being, you know, fragmented, because they don't even know what a form is. They know deep down, but they're so clouded with ignorance, with darkness, that they can't see the importance of the form, the pure form. And so then there is the profane trace of synchronizing. And synchronizing is about the uniform, the one form. So the unconscious alignment with the external rhythms through entertainment, conformity, automation, where action imitates meaning without inner awareness or intention or presence. So, you know, just think about the political spectrum, because people identify with a party, right? They identify with what they believe fits them and their values and their lives. So they align or they sync up to man's control structure, because that's what the political spectrum is. It's a control structure of man. So they become uniform. They synchronize to the policies, even if they're immoral, because they don't even know what morality is. Most people have no idea. Some people kind of know, but kind of knowing doesn't mean you know, really, because they blindly conform. They uniform. And there's so much more to that. I mean, there is so much more to that that really needs to be talked about. But I'm really just trying to make the point that this is a profane trace. It's tracing out something that people just don't understand. They're tracing out politicians not understanding that they're really putting a proxy in place for something that they're missing. That's why there is mommy and daddy issues. Like, the state represents the mommy issues, and the government itself represents the daddy issues. The right wing represents the daddy issues and the void for the daddy, and then the left wing represents the mommy issues and the void of the mommy or the ma. So that's why people turn to these politicians. They trace in a profane way. It's not sacred, because these people are nobody. They're no one special. They're only special because people believe that they're special. It's all egotism, all of it. Now think about video games. Think about sports. You know, people identify themselves with their favorite sports team or their favorite player on the sports team or players. And they do this to the point of believing that nothing else in the world matters. They believe that they act like their lives depend on these games, these teams, these players. Their mood depends on whether the team loses or wins. So if they lose, they're in a bad mood. If they win, they're in a good mood. So they're ego identified. And this is a very easy way to control people's minds, because they're already emotionally invested and ego identified. So these same types of people that are into sports are typically into video games as well. And the people that are, and the kids and the adults, I see so many adults that are so invested in video games. And it's because they're still living out their childhood. But they're unified nowadays in escapism, because everyone of today they're playing online with each other at the same time. So they're all unified through these video games, and they basically get lost in the games, where time doesn't matter. It doesn't exist in their minds. And therefore, responsibility doesn't matter. It's void. Where the game itself becomes a fantasy world. It's a proxy. It's a fill-in for the real journey. Because people are going on journeys in these video games, but they're not going on the real internal spiritual journey, because that's the void. The void is the internal journey of the self, the spiritual journey, which is way cooler than any of these games, even though the games are, I mean, it's way more painful for sure than the game, because the games you can just turn off and it's done. And also it's a lot of fun. Spiritual work is not really fun, but it's pretty amazing. It's It brings a lot of clarity, a lot of understanding about what it is that you're really here to do, or what we're really here to do. And so these fantasy games are basically worlds of rules that don't really apply to the real world. And this is really what causes a further profane trace, especially of natural law. What about one of the most devastating psychological traces of all, or programs of all, which is porn? You know, when people are watching porn, they are mentally emulating or synchronizing with the sexual behaviors that they see on the screen. So they sync themselves up with the person. They act like they're the person that they desire to be more like. And this causes a major distortion towards actual relationships that follow this behavior. It traces a sacred act in nature in a very distorted way. So it degenerates the mind. It degenerates the body of any real connection. So it's a profane tracing of any real sacred connection. It's not sacred. And, you know, it takes people a lot of strength to rise up out of this behavior, because people are so addicted, because it's an easy way to trace something that is, that causes some kind of relief or some kind of release away from the sacred, which is painful to face, which is painful to detect, or to do the detective work. Because every one of us is a detective. Every one of us is an investigator. That's what the real trace is about. But see, when we're living out these, you know, NPC-like lives where we're not conscious, where we're just going through the motions and not caring about ourselves internally or the real world, then we're basically acting out the profane. The military and law enforcement are major profane traces as well, because they're following orders with no care for whether what they're doing is right or wrong. They're using principles of enlightenment in a profane way, because they're using the principle of non-aggression. They're going against that. They're always aggressing upon people's rights. And then if someone wants to protect themselves or defend themselves rightfully, then there is this quote-unquote justification for defending, quote-unquote defending themselves against someone who is trying to defend themselves against the aggression upon their rights. So it's profane. It's absolutely profane, because everything they do is the opposite of the sacred. You know, think about the scrolling that everybody does. People are entrenched in scrolling, which is a hyper fragmentized synchronization, because it's a uniform of chaos. Everybody is in one form of holy chaos when they're scrolling, because it's an inverted version of the real scrolls of knowledge, of ancient knowledge and wisdom. Everything is compartmentalized. So this is the Setian principle of chopping up the light into the pieces. Everything is fragmented. Pure forms are absolutely annihilated in scrolling because everybody is on a different platform scrolling away. I mean, that's what it's all about, to keep people scrolling forever and getting little tiny pieces, little tiny breadcrumbs, or little specks of the breadcrumbs that don't really add up to anything. So it keeps people enthralled in these false scrolls. So it's important to get a book out and read, learn about the mind, learn about history, learn about symbolism, learn about things that actually matter. Learn about the human condition, period. Because scrolling is not going to help you learn about that type of information. It's just not. And then there is the ritual aspect of the profane trace, which is the mindless routine. So the thoughtless repetition of actions that are once rooted in meaning, now hollowed out by habit, obligation, or social inertia. And again, you know, think about the political mentality that people have. Maybe you have it, you know, and this isn't a personal thing when I'm talking about this. I'm just calling out the condition. Because the true meaning in the political spectrum is internal, like I just talked about. Because everyone avoids the fact that the political spectrum is a distorted manifestation of human traumas and animalistic behavior. It's all ignorance. It's all darkness. It's a social Darwinistic behavior. It's a distorted science of consciousness. It's inverted and twisted and completely, you know, flipped upside down. It's the human mind that is divided and then manifested into a political authoritarian prison. That's all it is, which creates slavery. It is slavery. So this is the routine that is repeated over and over again. And most people, you know, they never think twice about it. Most people are just, they give lip service to any political atmosphere or puppet, which is ritualistically carrying out the agenda of the dark occult. This is holding man's law firmly in place by behaving this way, by believing this way. And anytime someone publicly speaks out against one puppet or the other, or one policy or the other, or one party or the other, that person is publicly defending government, regardless of whether they don't believe that to be true or not. They're ritualistically holding man's authority above natural law. And no matter how much they think they're freedom-oriented or see themselves as any type of truth seeker, they're still caught in the dialectic. They're still politically charged, which means they're still in support of man's law, which means they're still in support of slavery, whether they understand that or not. Think about the church. Think about a mosque or, you know, any type of temple or lodge, a synagogue. People in today's world, they go to their religious physical temple with an obligation, with a habit, just because that's really what most of them were taught from an early age. They don't question why they really go to these temples. They don't really care, other than maybe they think if they don't go, then they're going to, you know, go to a place called hell that they don't even understand. And that is if they don't go. Or they're, you know, going to be ostracized by their family or fellow religious members. They're afraid of this. So they go through the motion and say they believe in God, even though they don't really know anything about God or the creation other than what they've been taught in their religious texts, and they don't even really understand that. But they just show up to church, to these temples. They do this to virtue signal their conduct, to act like they care, to act like they, you know, want to be good in the world. And deep down, I think people really do want to be good, but they don't want to do the work to truly be good and aligned with the laws of creation. And this is going on not just in religious temples. This is also going on in other systems like the public schools and other different types of schools, school systems. It's going on in the, definitely going on in the judicial system and basically all government systems, including the military, including law enforcement. So it's all just thoughtless routine. That's a profane ritual. Not questioning whether what they're part of is right or wrong, or whether it's true or not true. Just going through the motion and going along to get along. That's what it's all about. You know, just think about what's going on right in our homes, our own homes, with rituals, mindless routines that people go through all the time. I'm guilty of this. I'm getting better, but you know, people have very terrible diets because really they have very terrible habits. And that's not to say that, you know, a lot of the diets are terrible, because that's just what we've been brought up into perpetually. But the point is, that's what we have. We have very terrible diets and very terrible habits of those diets. And typically, as soon as most people get home from work, they either watch TV, which is loaded with low-frequency programs. Most programs are just completely filled with crap that has nothing to do with any truth or reality. And many people are drinking lots of really bad chemicals, smoking really bad chemicals, poisons. They consume a lot of refined sugars, things that are fogging their mind. So just think of the fog or the mist in the real, you know, physical part of our being. Because if we're not physically bettering ourselves, it's also causing harm to the way that we think. It's causing a fog in our signal. So when we're destroying our immune system, we're also destroying our signal. And people think, you know, being an adult is about comfort, after work, turning off the world, not caring, and just completely ignore all the wonders within the temple internally, because they don't even know what that is, because they've never stepped foot in it, because they've never cared to even be curious of what that really is. So by doing so, they're completely ignoring the human condition, because they're ignoring their own condition. No shadow work at all. They just do the typical work, eat, sleep ritual every day, over and over and over. And they get stuck in this profane trace loop cycle, because that's what it is. It's about tracing the cycle, this vicious cycle every single day, going through the motions every single day, unconscious about what is going into the mind, into the body, and what the body is actually going through altogether. So below that, or beside the ritual, is mimicking, which is about distorting and fragmenting pure forms. So this is the unconscious or disrespectful imitation of sacred forms, a hollow mimicry that distorts or trivializes the original essence, severing form from meaning. So think about the LARPing furries. If you've never heard of the furries, these are what you see in the bottom left of mimicking with the person that's dressed up in cosplay. So it's a grown physical adult behaving as a child in cosplay. They're role playing as animals, but it's a cartoon animal. So this is a major further corruption of the fetish totemism. They're not wearing these suits for totemic rituals in nature. They're not spreading messages of freedom. They're not spreading messages or teaching natural law. They don't care for truth. They don't care about cycles or cycle measurement or timekeeping. They only care about role playing, because it's an ego-identified way of escaping reality and acting out some kind of fantasy because something's missing. So we have to understand that deep down, people truly want to be connected. They do. We all want to be connected. But a lot of people just can't figure out how to overcome their base desires. They can't figure out how to overcome their ignorance or their laziness or their cowardice. So people yearn deeply to be totemic through the sacred symbols, through the gestures, through the signs, but they refuse to trace the sacred in an honest, mature manner. So it remains profane. And in the Freudian psychoanalysis, he talks about sexual fetishism. And I think this is really, really important to pay very close attention to, because it's about fixating on an object as a substitute for a repressed desire or an absence of something. So an example would be a missing phallus as a symbol. Okay, so think about that allegorically or symbolically with Osiris, because this is really about materialism in the sense that people are unconscious of spirit. They're not aware of spirit yet. They're not aware that spirit is mentally missing. They're not aware that it's spiritually missing. And so material things become a proxy for spirit. You know, think about shoe brands. They become a proxy for spirit. And it's kind of ironic that shoes are for the soul of the foot, but nevertheless, it's for the soul. So the shoe becomes a proxy for the soul. Car brands and car models become a proxy for the spirit. Identifying with material things is really just a proxy for what's missing. And this is what generates the profane trace. It's a fetishism. So these people that are wearing cartoon animals, you know, to have fun and fantasize, you know, and I'm not trying to just pick on them either, but it's a very interesting phenomenon because of the fact that they're wearing animals. Okay, because it's like a cartoon totemism. But these people are physical adults. Most of them are physical adults. And wearing cartoon animals as fantasy, especially while being a physical adult, is sexual and totemic fetishism in a very distorted form. Okay, so it's very fragmented. And honestly, just think of all the Norse gods that people cosplay in today's world. And they have no idea that they're wearing a watered-down, fragmented, elemental, pure form. Something that's sacred that's being confounded. It's being perverted. And then there's the hand of a cosplay judge who's holding a gavel. And again, this is another LARPing behavior. A person who thinks that they have a right or thinks that they get to decide what to do with people's lives, with their rights. And they do this in a made-up judgment hall, which is what we call a courtroom of today. And these people can just throw people in a cage regardless of whether what they did is moral or immoral. And this is according to man's law. And these judges, they wear black Saturnian or Setian robes, which really just means that they believe they're the literal Kronos god. I mean, they don't really believe that, but they act like it because they think that they can just wield natural law. They believe that they're the rulers of time, of your time. And this is dealing with the house of Capricorn, the half fish and half goat, the sea goat. And if you're familiar with the Wheel of Fortune card of tarot, this is about the rota, which is about the control of cycles and rotation, something I talked about in my new presentation, Mental Power. Are you going to let man's law control time, your time and you, or are you going to take responsibility and control your behavior and your time and your attention in accordance with natural laws? And do this because you're resisting evil. And these Saturnian judges, they basically usurp the power of karma. They play a role of power. They pretend to be the karmic consequence, but really, they don't know anything about natural law, okay? They know nothing about natural law, truly. But they use a gavel, which is Masonic. Okay, so this is dark masonry that we're talking about. Okay, they use the gavel with absolutely no understanding of what it really is, what it really means. They don't know anything about the seven. They don't know anything about the double-headed axe. They know nothing of this type of information because they're only concerned with money and power. Judges are. They think they're God. They think that they get to rule over others and decide their fate. So they're aligned in dark care in a way. Well, I mean, really, they're absolutely aligned in dark care. But it's, we have to understand that judges are not, you know, the rulers of the world, the dark psychologists of the world. But the point is that they're playing a role for the dark psychologists. And they think that they're doing good. And these people, these judges, really only have power because people believe in them and what they do. And also, they couldn't do anything without their law enforcers, okay? Who really are the highest of the profane. They're the bane profane. Order followers are the bane of freedom in this world. And then you have the golden bull, or what's known as the worship of the golden calf. And this is one of the most powerful archetypal warnings against mistaking the symbol for the source. Okay, so this is about fetishism. So this is a central theme in many religions, especially in Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. And like I talked about with the proxy messiah of the sun, and like I talked about earlier about fetishism, where the reverence or the adoration of the object represents the soul or spirit, which is referred to as the ka in the ancient Kemetian tradition. And its symbolic representation begins to deteriorate or get lost as a result. So this is what adultery is really all about. It's about the misplaced reverence for the ka, or for the spirit, or for the soul. So people begin seeing the gold as material wealth rather than spirit. So they begin to see the calf as the image of God. So anytime you see the calf, you think it's God. But it just replace the calf with a person or a president. Okay, someone who claims to be a president. So this is about understanding that a man-made object is mimicking the sacred, but it lacks the substance and the mystery of the true source. So symbols and archetypes can become prisons, because what begins as a representation of the divine or the spirit can become a barrier if mistaken for the divine or the spirit itself. So the golden calf of today would definitely be the political puppet. Okay? But it's not just the political puppet. It's so many other things and so many other people. It's just, I mean, it's celebrities, it's material objects, it's money. There's so much. It's TV. There's so many things that have become proxies for the sacred, for the spirit. So let's go to the next slide, being the profane trace with the dollar bills at the top. The profane trace is an unconscious or distorted imprint of sacred patterns, a gesture, symbol, or action that mimics the form of nature, the pure form of nature or truth, but is severed from its meaning, intention, or source. It reflects disconnection rather than alignment, often arising from habit, ignorance, appropriation, or ego. And I've already talked about most of these images, but we have the dollar bill, the front and back of the dollar bill, the first dollar bill or $1 bill, which is green like nature. Okay, so that's already a proxy. It's a proxy for nature, the green is. And it has four angles or four ones. Okay, this is, just think about what I showed you earlier with the square and the X and the four corners. And I've already talked about this with Doug in the 73rd or the 74th show. I can't remember which one it was, but it's about understanding that the president is the proxy for spirit or the soul. So this is a claim to the Most High. And then you have the pyramid, the all-seeing eye on the back of the dollar bill, which is a proxy for true illumination. Because it's money instead of mon eye, being one eye. And there's so much more to that, okay? But it's important to understand front and back. It's the same with coins, okay? Because, you know, heads and tails. So you have the alpha and the omega, the beginning and end, right? Now, at the bottom of the slide, it reads, the profane trace is the shadow of a sacred line drawn without awareness. It's traced without awareness. So think about what I talked about earlier about tracing with paper. You're tracing something, you have no idea what you're actually tracing. But are you tracing to understand, or are you tracing just to live a material, low, you know, floor-based, conscious way of life? So drawing without awareness is repeated without reverence and echoing a pure form no longer understood. So that's why we've been cut off from our origins. That's why we have to reconnect this archway back to pure form. And that's going to take that lunar care, that sacred feminine care to do so. So the profane trace is a form of disrespect, apart from the respect, away from taking another look. The shadow of a sacred line is the ignorance of pure forms, okay? And this is about using forms in ways that negate the sacred and basically mock the holy outline of reality. We have to remember that the world of materialism is a shadow of pure forms. That's what it is. It's a fragmentation of the spirit, because the light has been basically blighted out to the four corners of the square or the earth. Now we're going to go to the next slide, and I'm not going to have time to break this down, but I'm going to just briefly go through this information, because we're just going to have to pick this up on the next episode, but we're going to get into the sacred trace. And you'll see that I put Thoth, the Netcher, on the background, okay? And this is really important to pay very close attention to, because Thoth is associated with the sacred trace. And that's not said anywhere. It's about understanding what Thoth really represents, and I'm going to get into that. But it's just important to understand that when we're dealing with the sacred of measurements, when we're dealing with the sacred of geometry, we're dealing with Thoth, okay? So it's really important to keep him in mind, and, you know, anything that's associated with him while going through the sacred trace episodes, which is going to be this episode, the next episode, and also the episode that follows, okay? So I really intend to spend as much time as it takes to really break this down, because it's so very important. And even though a lot of what I already said, many people probably already are understanding and have a pretty good idea of everything that I already talked about, but it's setting the tone for what I'm going to get to with this Netcher Thoth, and also the sacred trace and the logos, okay? Because that's really what it's all about. And Thoth is a major part of this concept. So the word sacred, we're just going to quickly go through this slide just to get people acquainted with the sacred trace. So that way, when we start the next show, we'll just start right with this information, and I'll go a lot deeper into it, okay? So the word sacred has a few meanings that we should familiarize ourselves with. And the first meaning says regarded with respect. And this is meaning that something that deserves very close attention and deep observation. You know, time and attention is required for the sacred. And it also means holy. Sacred means holy, which is about something being pure or whole, like a pure form, okay? Something that hasn't been or can't be truly corrupted. Something grand, okay? But it can be covered up. It can be forgotten. It can be severed away from our understanding. Sacred can also mean connected with or to the Creator, or connection with the intelligence of the universe. So it's about something being connected to all that is, okay? And sacred can mean worthy of veneration, which is really all about having the highest form of respect or reverence for something so pure and so powerful, especially something natural in nature, like law, okay? Or like the force of a wave, or thunder, or lightning, or the sunlight, you know, the warmth of the sun, or the stars, the, you know, grand starry night. This is worthy of veneration. It's worthy of attention. So it's sacred, okay? Now, trace means to follow in the sense of a course. So to follow or pursue through a process or through a sequence. You know, think about the fact that anyone listening, truly listening to this show, this course, is actually tracing it out. Maybe they're not, you know, tracing it out fully, but maybe they're tracing out by just listening. Or maybe they're tracing out by taking notes, or both. But either way, it's about tracing for the truth. Because when we're tracing the sacred, we're tracing for truth. And it also means to track or search, which means to observe or investigate or trace the footsteps of something, like a breadcrumb trail. And all you need is a trace amount of evidence or a piece of information to begin the investigation. And this is what the unfoldment is all about. And trace also means to make an outline of something, indicating that something can be discovered through enough evidence or gathering eclectic information. So to copy or render form by following its lines like geometry or symbolism. And trace figuratively means to ponder or to investigate. So, in other words, this means to contemplate or to think about what has been researched or what has been collected, to trace to and fro through the spire ritual, going from the outside to the in and back out again. So this is also about deductive reasoning and inductive reasoning. So the sacred trace means to investigate and outline that which is holy or pure. And the outline is the art, an action of tracing. You know, to search and observe and follow back to pure forms. And pure forms can also be called holy forms or sacred forms in this case. So we have to distill information into a big picture of connection and understanding, because it's about getting back to pure forms, which helps us arrive closer to source. And be able to, you know, connect the dots symbolically, historically, and ultimately spiritually. So with that being said, I'm going to go ahead and end it there. And the next show is going to be all about the sacred trace. And then probably the show after that is going to be the Logos and then Thoth. Okay, so I'm just going to take as much time as I need to with this information, because it's really important and I'm just trying to be as thorough as possible. And so I really hope that you have a pretty good idea of the profane trace, as well as understanding this is the opposite, the antithesis of the sacred trace. Okay, so I'm going to really, really lay it out. And I really hope that you'll tune in again for the next episode. And I really thank you for making it all the way through this show. And if you're interested for more episodes, presentations, or news, you can go to cubbyhole.com. Also, I just want to make mention that we are being greatly affected by censorship, as anybody who's really paying attention can imagine. And I really highly recommend downloading these episodes and sharing them with anybody you can, when you can. And the download button is right under the audio player. So if you're on the website and you go to the audio player and left click on the audio player, it'll take you to another window. Another play button, and just left click on the three little dots on the right, and it should give you the option to download, to save the MP3. So it's pretty easy, and I just want to stress how very important it is to preserve this knowledge. And even if you don't fully agree or understand the information, it is so crucial to save this information and study this information and bring your own knowledge to this information, so that way you can see for yourself how vital it really is. And I would do this for anyone else's work. I wouldn't just do this for the cubbyhole. I'd do this for anyone else's work that you find value in, because the information is being systematically squelched. And we really, really got to take this information so much more serious if we are going to have a chance at helping others awaken to what's really going on so we can raise up out of the ashes of ignorance and slavery and really move forward in a more positive, freedom-oriented direction. And that being said, I'm your host, Nate Kapp. Thank you for listening. And keep in mind to do no harm. You know, don't stand for the rights of others to be violated. Defend truth, what's correct, what's true, and keep transcending dogmas.